Creator of sensations that will always last. You are the knowledge, the teacher, the influence to keep the people sane. You are a healer for spirit pain. Grandmother Moon, we love you, and we are angry at the invaders who trash you and violate our universe with their mechanical uncleanliness. We pray for you, for us, and for the invader who just can't comprehend, respect, love, or the balance of life. We do not join the invading madness. From the way they act, it speaks of a spirit sadness. Machine money problems.
I pray for a day like today, bright and shining. Soca glory, everyone with a flag and a smile on their face. Lordy daddy, of every creed and race, Lord. Phenomenal, lovely atmosphere. If the Lord is our shepherd, who shall be here?
No one.
Yes, the party starts on here, CKW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. Yes, we're hitting you harder and harder and harder and harder right up until 8 a.m. this morning. This is Fantastic Friday on CKW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. Last week, oh, Prince Ogona, Princess Tim Sulum, Queen Victoria, Dr. T, and John, who was here but never here. And also here at times is Princess Rachel. And here all the time at this time is Princess Catherine, making sure we up and down and out and in and round about, giving all the best songs that we can on a fantastic Friday morning. Look out! Open up your eyes.
Manuela, and
you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
Crazy horse, we hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth, the people walk upon. We are the land. How do we sell our mother? How do we sell the star?
On at the ledge.
How do we sell the air?
Yeah, thanks, Creason. Behind me here, they have already put up the sacred teepee. In the coming hours, they will have the sacred fire here. Of course, it's to honor the life of the Honorable Justice Murray Sinclair as the, as the guy he was, but also, honoring him in his spiritual journey. That's what you do with a fire. And so, he was also known as Mijene Gijik. That was his spirit name, and it's the one who speaks of pictures in the sky. So basically, what we know is that Sinclair had passed away early this morning at the St. Boniface Hospital. His family was by his side. Just a couple weeks ago, his family made a post about his health on Facebook, which went viral. So, there was some news that this may be coming, but it's still shocking.
TR, Mr. Sinclair has quite the legacy. Can you share a bit about some of the work he's done?
The people lose their mind.
Yeah, that's right, Creason. His career spans for nearly half a century. He was most known for his work with the Truth and Reconciliation. He led that. But it really started back in 1979 when he became a lawyer. From then, in 1988, he became the first Indigenous lawyer here in Manitoba. That same year, he also led the Aboriginal Justice Inquiry. That came at a time in history when tension was high between, Manitobans and Indigenous people. And in 2001, he also became a judge for the Court of Queen's Bench.
And over the years, TR, he's got recognition for his work. What do some of those accolades look like?
Yes, Creason, he had so many. He had 14 honorary Doctor of Law degrees from many Canadian universities. He won the Inspire Award twice, first in 94 for his law career, and then later on for his life career. He's won the Order of Canada, he's won the Order of Manitoba, and many more that we will talk about later in the evening news.
We'll have to leave it there, TR. Thank you so much for taking the time.
With the Honorable Murray Sinclair's passing today, Canada lost the job. Murray's commitment to this country
today is now
commitment to the ideals of this country. His
dream
commitment
touch the clouds
to Indigenous peoples and to all Canadians.
On a day when death didn't die,
extraordinary. He will be missed.
Real world time.
by Tricks. People from coast Shadows. To coast to coast. My heart especially goes Red. Out to his family.
White.
To Perception. Whom he was exceptionally close and of whom he was
Predator
incredibly proud.
Predator civilizing us.
But the tribe
his values
gold,
of service,
return.
Of commitment, of perseverance.
A song from the heart.
Wisdom and grace
to give.
With which he navigated unbelievably difficult issues for Canada and for Canadians.
Crazy.
The generosity he brought to it, but also the deep convictions and immovable strength
one does not sell.
He brought to bear on such extraordinary challenges were an inspiration to all of us.
How
serve this country in whatever capacity.
How do we sell the stars?
He is rightly being remembered for an extraordinary life filled
Crazy
with achievements.
Words. We hear what you say.
But for me, his
Crazy
leadership
words.
On the Truth and Reconciliation
we
Commission.
We are.
The calls to action
the
he put forward and how he then
we are.
Remained
the
committed to
generation.
Not just setting out the work, but participating actively in seeing the work done throughout this country at all different levels was exceptional. To me, he was a teacher, a challenge function, a guide, an elder, a sage, and a friend as he helped me and this country navigate through something that we will be navigating through for decades still, this reconciliation journey that we have taken some important strides on, where there remains so much more to do. This is a moment for us to remember him, to recognize and celebrate him, but also take on all the work that he has left us as we continue to fight every day for a better country, for Indigenous peoples, and indeed for all Canadians.
Murray Sinclair was the living embodiment of reconciliation in this country.
Standing before a sacred fire at the Manitoba Legislature, many have lined up to mark the passing of Murray Sinclair, a trailblazing leader whose dedication towards truth and reconciliation reshaped Canada's view on Indigenous rights, with his legacy sure to leave a lasting impact on communities nationwide.
Murray Sinclair, a former judge, senator, and chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, died Monday morning in Winnipeg at the age of 73. In a statement, his family spoke about the impact of their father's work across the country and the world, from residential school survivors to law students. Sinclair was touted as an exceptional listener who treated everyone with dignity and respect. The family encourages those who wish to pay their respects to gather at a sacred fire set up at the legislature.
It will be a long time before our nation produces another person the caliber of Murray Sinclair. He showed us that there is no reconciliation without truth.
Sinclair's remarkable career spanned from Manitoba's legal system to the Senate, where he served from 2016 to 2021. Sinclair was raised on the former St. Peter's Indian Reserve near Selkirk, where he became high school valedictorian and athlete of the year in 1968. After graduating from the University of Manitoba's Law School in 1979, Sinclair became Manitoba's first Indigenous judge. Soon after, he rose to prominence in 1988 as co-commissioner of the Aboriginal Justice Inquiry, examining systemic racism following the deaths of J.J. Harper and Helen Betty Osborne. In 1994, he led the pediatric cardiac surgery inquest, investigating the deaths of 12 children at the Health Sciences Center. But his most significant work came in 2009 as chair of Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
We are the land.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
songs of Quincy Jones. Who left us a little bit ago, a few days ago. You know, Quincy Jones is a black producer and musician extraordinaire. He did a lot of Michael Jackson's things like Bad and all of those kind of music. And this is a piece that he did. You hear that show all the time with Austin Powers, eh? You hear that Austin Powers business all the time. This theme was written by Quincy Jones. Love and kindness. Let him travel safe.
Niggas don't know me. Well, that's my name. When the fucking thing changed, still the same. Dog got dope, but raw niggas.
How did you can get it? Memory lane.
I rap that. Beat star niggas. Respect that. Step back. Come at me sideways and get laid down where you standing. Bat out with the cannon. So stop all the dirty fucking looks. Cause y'all niggas ain't fucking crooks. Fuck around and get jumped. Come on.
Give them what they want.
Come on.
Give them what they want.
Come on.
Give them what they want. They all can't get it.
Hi, I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
And I just put my drink down. Fuck that hoe, fuck that bitch, just fuck that hoe to the condom slip. Who the fuck y'all hoes think run this shit? Missy, her black vagina, designer, say Gucci, Prada print. D-O-E, I'm a condo rich, big Dolce, Diva, Donda, Dandada, Tokyo, Honda drip. Niggas tweaking, hoes is geeking, pussy popping, Dolce season, new persona, new vagina, push back, but I'm still gon' get that. Labels quaking, hoes is pissed, they mistaken, I'm that bitch. Wrist they frozen, cue the Trojans, let's go, I'ma get. Unfuck with a boo bitch, why bother? I'm that bitch, I'm that bitch, I'm that bitch, and you bitches ain't no shit. I'ma get money type of bitch. If you ain't getting money, don't type me, bitch. Crocodile Birkin might bite a bitch. Can't hang with a hoe if I don't like the bitch. Fuck these niggas and these bitches. I come through and nip you crickets. I come through and moose be switching. I'm the problem, I'm the villain. I don't see these hoes, these
going dirt on my name. Listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM when you're down in Winnipeg. It's just badness and niceness right up until 8 a.m. this morning. All types will be. You'll also be hearing from Ibrahim talking about Sudan and his progress.
Hi, I'm Dale Rufus, and you're listening to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9, my favorite Friday morning wake-up show.
This is for my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my cans. Sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and risers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
Oh, it said Local 79. I thought this was a great thing. A different book list has just moved from the west side of the street to the east side of the street. And we've moved from 746 Bathurst Street
this
to
is
777 to 779.
Third World Bookstore right? made under her.
So listen, I looked at the 79 and I thought, I'm on a good thing. Yes. I want to acknowledge to the other speakers, Brother Don, Sister Lily, and also Sister Felicia, and I would be amiss not to acknowledge two other people. This is my good sister girlfriend, Valerie Joseph, who is in the trenches here in the trade union movement, and back in the back, who is always watching our back, is none other than Brother Norman Otis Richmond, who over the years on CKLN consistently and continue to do that on Diasporic Radio, bring us progressive politics and also to keeps us village vigilant and on point. And when I was asked to speak today, a million things popped off in my head. And I was born in this country in a sexy place called Scarborough. And I went to live with my grandparents in Barbados. My mother was a woman who came on the domestic program in the 1950s from Barbados. And she came here. Her name is Gloria Emmeline Walcott. And she came here around the age of 16 and 17 as a new immigrant to this country. She landed in Montreal, in a nation that speaks French. She didn't know the language. I think she landed in the middle of winter. And here is this young woman from Barbados coming to this new country. And she then sent me to Barbados because she understood that great things happen in small places, just like Caribbean nations. And one of the good things of having that experience in Barbados, that I saw people who looked like me, who was desirous to have independence and run a nation and run government. But I was also mindful of the role of trade unions in Barbados. So because I'm in the space of trade unionism, I have to acknowledge that shaping and foundation of my experience here in Canada. And one of the things about trade unionists in Barbados, and I remember there's a man by the name of Frank Walcott, and I always reference him. And he was like
poetic
gestures. One of the scholars and one of the men of Barbados.
Yeah.
Of Toronto, the rhythm and the sway cannot wait to be embraced. This diverse, alive, inverse city where trees grow around the cement, our new self in concrete, our feet against concrete as we go about our ways. Percussion, play, echoes, echo, 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 echoing, learning to love what we have made. Softening between brick and cement, a built-up world, steeples and stairs, glass mirrors, sparring for social change, for social change. Can you spare a little social change, please? New voices roasted and wrapped in ice. My mother walked from the airplane into a fridge. That is Toronto in winter. Winter.
I would like to say hello to everybody out there on the core area. Everybody at Rossburg House, where I grew up with and worked there. And I would like to say hello to everybody at Vineyard and everybody at Salome Mission. And and everybody in Wei Wei Si Capo, and to my little newborn son Neil.
My name is Devon Harton, recipient of the 2015 Pan-African Award of Excellence. This means a lot to me. Over the years, I've been contributing to the community, and this award touches my heart. I feel very good and happy about this award. If my mom was around, she would be very happy and proud to know that, yes, I have got this award, and I would say thank you. So to the committee, I want to say thank you, because this is one of the most happiest moments of my life. I thank you very much. Come out on November the 8th at the Jamaican Canadian Center, 995 Hour Road. Come and join me and all the recipients in this memorable occasion, red carpet, gala, awards, dinner, and entertainment. 995 Hour Road, Jamaican Canadian Center, November the 8th. For more info, call 905-460-4145. Thank you. See you there.
The journey might sometimes be long. Sometimes find it hard to carry on. But the noble endeavors you have made is enough for me to say thank you so much. I love you, oh, oh, baby. Unsung hero, you have done a lot for me.
Watch the sun, watch out, anything now shall call, get washed out. Watch out the kingdom out and the queen, I come out, patch out, they spread it carpet. One thing we have to tell on us, watch out. Adam Ransing, Adam Ransing. Watch me now, it name murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the date me and the queen in a the park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the con, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them want to give me a fight. Show me look cute and them no look too right. They call on me to over me, man a fight. And that now one no time in a them life. Me no cut up, I can model every time. Absolute niceness, come with pair rhyme. First class dress code and your style a lick. The quality, my feet come back quick, cause murder me wrote and me no take back me chat.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Well, here it is. Listen up, listen up.
Where you come from, as long as you're a black man,
a black woman or a black child.
No mind your nationality, you have got the identity.
And perspicacity.
Because if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from West,
really don't matter. Because coming to you from the continent in West Africa, in a country called Nigeria, is a brother called Prince Ogona, coming to give you news and views from Africa. Prince Ogona!
Yes, good morning, Africa, and good morning to all of our listeners. Today, we look at democracy now. We speak with Richard Cummins of the aid group Save the Children International. Cummins joins from Deir al-Bala in central Gaza, where aid organizations have been halted from entering the north.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization said at least four children were injured after Israeli forces dropped a stun grenade on a polio immunization center in Gaza City's Sheikh Radwan district. Israel's attack came despite agreeing to a humanitarian pause in order to carry out the final phase of the polio immunization campaign after it was postponed in October due to Israel's indiscriminate bombardment, siege, and repeated targeting of humanitarian aid workers. This is a Palestinian mother of three speaking from Gaza City.
I stayed here in northern Gaza along with all my children and came here to give my children the polio vaccine. They were supposed to get it a month ago, but due to the Israeli offensive and the siege, it was delayed a month. We hope it will protect the children against polio. I call on the world to stop the genocide of northern Gaza because we are literally dying. Those who do not die from bombardments are dying from hunger. The situation is catastrophic.
Some 15,000 children under the age of 10 in towns across northern Gaza, including Jabalia, Bethlehia, and Beit Hanun, still remain inaccessible and will likely not receive this dose of the oral polio vaccine due to Israel's attacks and blockade. This all comes as 15 humanitarian groups are describing the situation in northern Gaza as apocalyptic, with top UN officials again warning the entire Palestinian population in North Gaza is, quote, at imminent risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence, unquote. The region has been under an Israeli siege for nearly a month while Israel continues to block life-saving humanitarian aid from entering North Gaza. Aid groups fear the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza will soon worsen as Israel has officially notified the UN that it's cut off ties to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. We go directly to Deir al-Balah in Gaza, where we're joined by Rachel Cummings, Save the Children's International Humanitarian Director and team lead there in Gaza. Rachel, can you describe what's happening on the ground and what you're calling for?
Hello, and thanks for the opportunity. We are calling for a ceasefire, a definitive ceasefire. You know, children in Gaza are facing an extraordinary situation. You've described it extremely well in terms of the constant onslaught and bombardment of children in Gaza, in the north, in the middle area, and in the south of Gaza, across the whole of the Gaza Strip. You know, we have over 14,000 children who have been killed. You referenced the 50 children that were killed most recently in an attack in a shelter in the north of Gaza. But this is a constant bombardment, and children are dying every single day. There is not enough food in Gaza. There is not enough water and clean water for people in Gaza. The situation is absolutely desperate.
And so what exactly has to happen in at this moment? Describe the level of aid you can get and the polio immunization programs being stopped because of the bombardment.
You know, the fact that the center that was providing the polio vaccines was attacked at this time is unfathomable. It's extraordinary that that event has happened. And, of course, that will have a knock-on effect and an impact, not only of the people that were impacted.
We're just having slight tech issues. We'll get to that.
Because of the Meanwhile, The World Health Organization said at least four children were injured after Israeli forces dropped a stun grenade on a polio immunization center in Gaza City's Sheikh Radwan district. Israel's attack came despite agreeing to a humanitarian pause in order to carry out the final phase of the polio immunization campaign after it was postponed in October due to Israel's indiscriminate bombardment, siege, and repeated targeting of humanitarian aid workers. This is a Palestinian mother of three speaking from Gaza City.
I stayed here in northern Gaza along with all my children and came here to give my children the polio vaccine. They were supposed to get it a month ago, but due to the Israeli offensive and the siege, it was delayed a month. We hope it will protect the children against polio. I call on the world to stop the genocide of northern Gaza because we are literally dying. Those who do not die from bombardments are dying from hunger. The situation is catastrophic.
Some 15,000 children under the age of 10 in towns across northern Gaza, including Jabalia, Betlehia, and Beit Hanun, still remain inaccessible and will likely not receive this dose of the oral polio vaccine due to Israel's attacks and blockade. This all comes as 15 humanitarian groups are describing the situation in northern Gaza as apocalyptic, with top UN officials again warning the entire Palestinian population in North Gaza is, quote, at imminent risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence, unquote. The region has been under an Israeli siege for nearly a month while Israel continues to block life-saving humanitarian aid from entering North Gaza. Aid groups fear the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza will soon worsen as Israel has officially notified the UN that it's cut off ties to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. We go directly to Deir al-Balah in Gaza, where we're joined by Rachel Cummings, Save the Children's International Humanitarian Director and team lead there in Gaza. Rachel, can you describe what's happening on the ground and what you're calling for?
Hello, and thanks for the opportunity. We are calling for a ceasefire, a definitive ceasefire. You know, children in Gaza are facing an extraordinary situation. You've described it extremely well in terms of the constant onslaught and bombardment of children in Gaza, in the north, in the middle area, and in the south of Gaza, across the whole of the Gaza Strip. You know, we have over 14,000 children who have been killed. You referenced the 50 children that were killed most recently in an attack in a shelter in the north of Gaza. But this is a constant bombardment, and children are dying every single day. There is not enough food in Gaza. There is not enough water and clean water for people in Gaza. The situation is absolutely desperate.
And so what exactly has to happen at this moment? Describe the level of aid you can get and the polio immunization programs being stopped because of the bombardment.
You know, the fact that the center that was providing the polio vaccines was attacked at this time is unfathomable. It's extraordinary that that event has happened. And, of course, that will have a knock-on effect and an impact, not only of the people that were impacted at that time, but then the faith and the trust for women and parents and family members to take their children to health centers. You know, it's very important, obviously, for children to be vaccinated, but with the attacks on healthcare that are persistent, people will have lost faith and trust in the safety or the presumed safety of going to healthcare facilities to receive vaccines. So the knock-on effect on that will be massive. Now, what we need is improved access to humanitarian supplies, bring supplies in to Gaza, and then, of course, safe passage of those supplies and of our teams to be able to then reach the populations who are most in need. Every day, humanitarian workers, Save the Children staff, our partners, and other humanitarian workers across the whole of Gaza are literally risking their lives to deliver life-saving services to children and their families. This is an extraordinary and a very unique situation that we're seeing in Gaza. To be a child in Gaza, and I'm in Deir al-Balah, at the moment, in the middle area of the Gaza Strip, but it's a miserable existence for children. They're living under this constant fear. They've had no formal education for over 12 months now. So that normalcy of life, that routine, and education provides a degree of protection for children, not only for their physical health, but also for their mental health. We're deeply, deeply concerned about the mental health of 1 million children in Gaza. Every single child in Gaza has been affected by this war.
And if you could comment more on the targeting of humanitarian aid workers and Israel now officially notifying the UN it's cut off ties with UNRWA. How important is UNRWA in getting aid to and being observers on the ground to what's happening there in Gaza where you are?
It's hard to quantify or describe how important, how essential UNRWA is for the humanitarian endeavor, the humanitarian response in Gaza. But Gaza is, and has been for many decades, of course, wholly reliant and integrated within UNRWA, or rather UNRWA is integrated within the whole of Gaza and the Palestinian population. So as humanitarian agencies, we heavily rely on UNRWA to receive fuel, to support on coordination of access and movement of supplies. So UNRWA are a huge provider of life-saving services. Every day, they're providing over 15,000 consultations in the health facilities. Hundreds of thousands of people are living in the UNRWA-designated shelters that were previous UNRWA schools. Every sort of strand of society is wrapped up with UNRWA. So the cessation of UNRWA in terms of providing humanitarian life-saving support to the population here is extraordinary to even consider.
All right, so we have a second piece also from Democracy Now. With former U.S. President Donald Trump returning to the White House for his second term, we speak with Pakistani author and columnist Fatima Bhutto. Bhutto is an award-winning author and writes a monthly column for ZTO on World Affairs. She criticizes Kamala Harris's campaign for relying heavily on celebrity endorsements and vague appeals to joy, while silencing dissent on Gaza as the Biden administration continues backing Israel.
And I think anyone looking at the American elections for the last year, even longer, could see very clearly that the Democrats were speaking to, I'm not sure who, to a hall of mirrors. They ran an incredibly weak and actually macabre campaign. To see Kamala Harris describe her politics as one of joy as she promised the most lethal military in the world, talking about women's rights in America, essentially focusing those rights on the right to termination, while the rest of the world has watched women slaughtered in Gaza for 13 months straight. It's very curious to think that they thought a winning strategy was Beyonce and that Taylor Swift was somehow a political winning strategy that was going to defeat who? Trump, who was speaking to people, who was speaking against wars. Whether we believe him or not, it was a marked difference from what Kamala Harris was saying and was not saying.
And Fatima, you wrote a piece for ZTO earlier this year titled Gaza Has Exposed the Shameful Hypocrisy of Western Feminism. So you just mentioned
Feminism, hello everyone, and we're just experiencing some technical issues, but we should have it up and running soon. Stay tuned.
And I think anyone looking at the American elections for the last year, even longer, could see very clearly that the Democrats were speaking to, I'm not sure who, to a hall of mirrors. They ran an incredibly weak and actually macabre campaign to see Kamala Harris describe her politics as one of joy, as she promised the most lethal military in the world, talking about women's rights in America, essentially focusing those rights on the right to termination, while the rest of the world has watched women slaughtered in Gaza for 13 months straight. It's very curious to think that they thought a winning strategy was Beyonce and that Taylor Swift was somehow a political winning strategy that was going to defeat who? Trump, who was speaking to people, who was speaking against wars. Whether we believe him or not, it was a marked difference from what Kamala Harris was saying and was not saying.
And Fatma, you wrote a piece for Zeteo earlier this year titled Gaza Has Exposed the Shameful Hypocrisy of Western Feminism. So you just mentioned the irony of Kamala Harris as, the second presidential candidate who's a woman, where so much of the campaign was about women, and the fact that, of what's been unfolding on women, against women and children in Gaza for the last year, mm-hmm. if you could elaborate.
We've seen, Nermeen, over the last year, 70% of those slaughtered in Gaza by Israel, and let's also be clear, by America, because it's American bombs and American diplomatic cover that allows this slaughter to continue unabated. 70% of those victims are women and children. We have watched children with their heads blown off. We have watched children with no surviving family members find themselves in hospital with limbs missing. Gaza has the largest cohort of child amputees in the world. And we have seen newborns left to die as Israel switches off electricity and fuel of hospitals. So for Kamala Harris to come out and talk repeatedly about abortion, and I say this as someone who is pro-choice, who has always been pro-choice, was not just macabre, but it's obscene. It's an absolute betrayal of feminism, because feminism is about liberation. It's not about termination. And it's about protecting women at their most vulnerable and at their most frightened. And there was no sign of that. We also saw Kamala Harris bring out celebrities. I mean, the utter vacuousness of bringing out Jennifer Lopez, Beyonce, and others to talk about being a mother, while mothers are being widowed, are being orphaned in Gaza. It was not just tone deaf. It seemed to have a certain hostility, a certain contempt for the suffering that the rest of us have been watching. I'd also like to add to Robin's point about toxic masculinity. There was so much toxicity in Kamala Harris's campaign. I watched her laugh with Oprah as she spoke about shooting someone who might enter her house with a gun and giggling and saying her PR team may not like that, but she would kill them. You don't need to be a man to practice toxic masculinity, and you don't need to be white to practice white supremacy, as we've seen very clearly from this election cycle.
And yet, Fatima Bhutto, if you look at what Trump represented, and certainly the Muslim American community, the Arab American community, Jewish progressives, young people, African Americans, certainly understood what Trump's policy was when he was president. And it's rare, a president comes back to serve again after a term away. It's only happened once before in history. But you have, for example, Trump moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. You have an illegal settlement named after Trump in the West Bank. The whole question of Netanyahu and his right-wing allies in Israel pushing for annexation of the West Bank, where Trump would stand on this. And of course, you have the Abraham Accords, which many Palestinians felt left them out completely. If you can talk about this, these were put forward by Trump and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who, when the massive Gaza destruction was at its height, talked about Gaza as waterfront real estate.
Absolutely. There's no question that Trump has been a malign force, not just when it concerns Palestinians, but frankly, out in the world. But I would argue there's not very much difference between what these two administrations or parties do. The difference is that Trump doesn't have the gloss and the charisma of an Obama, or, I mean, I can't even say that Biden has charisma, but certainly the gloss. Trump says it, they do it. The difference, I can't really tell the difference anymore. We saw the Biden administration send over 500 shipments of arms to Israel, betraying America's own laws, the fact that they are not allowed to export weapons of war to a country committing gross violations of human rights. We saw Bill Clinton trotted out in Michigan to tell Muslims that actually they should stop killing Israelis and that Jews were there before them. I mean, it was an utterly contemptuous speech. So, What is the difference exactly? You know, we saw Bernie Sanders, who was mentioned earlier, write an op-ed in The Guardian in the days before the election, warning people that if they were not to vote for Kamala Harris, if Donald Trump was to get in, think about the climate crisis. Well, we've watched Israel's emissions in the first 5 months of their deadly attack on Gaza release more planet-warming gases into the atmosphere than 20 of the world's most climate-vulnerable nations release in a year. So I don't quite see that there is a difference between what Democrats allow and what Trump brags about. I think it's just a question of crudeness and decorum and politeness. One has it and one doesn't. In a sense, Trump is much clearer for the rest of the world because he says what he's going to do. And, you know, you take him at his word, whereas we have been gaslit and lied to by Anthony Blinken on a daily basis now since October 7th. Every time that AOC or Kamala Harris spoke about fighting desperately for a ceasefire, we saw more carnage, more massacres. And Israel committing crimes with total impunity. You know, it wasn't under Trump that Israel has killed more journalists than have ever been killed in any recorded conflict. It's under Biden that Israel has killed more UN workers than have ever been killed in the UN's history. So I'm not sure there's a difference. And, you know, we'll have to wait to see in the months ahead. But I don't think anyone is bracing for an upturn. Certainly people didn't vote for Kamala Harris. I'm not sure they voted for Trump. We know that she lost 14 million votes from Biden's win in 2020. And we know that those votes just didn't come out for the Democrats. Some may have migrated to Trump. Some may have gone to third parties. But 14 million just didn't go anywhere. It's a total racism on the part, not just of America, but I'm speaking of the West here. This has been betrayed over the last year. The fact that Ukraine is spoken about with an admiration, you know, Zelensky is spoken about with a sort of hero worship. Ukrainian resistors to Russia's invasion are valorized. You know, Nancy Pelosi wore a bracelet of bullets used by the Ukrainian resistance against Trump. But Palestinians are painted as terrorists, are dehumanized to such an extent. You know, we saw that dehumanization from the mouths of Bill Clinton, no less, from the mouths of Kamala Harris, who interrupted somebody speaking out against the genocide and saying, "I'm speaking." You know, what is more toxically masculine than that? We've also seen a concerted crackdown in universities across the United States on college students. I'm speaking also here of my own alma mater of Columbia University, of Barnard College, that called the NYPD, who fired live ammunition at their students. You know, this didn't happen. This extreme response didn't happen in protests against apartheid. It didn't happen in protests against Vietnam in quite the same way. And all I can think is America and the West, who have been fighting Muslim countries for the last 25, 30 years, see it as acceptable to do so. Our deaths are acceptable to them, and genocide is not a red line. And, you know, to go back to what Robin mentioned earlier about the working class that is absolutely ignored in America, and I would make the argument across the West, too, they have watched administration after, you know, president and congressman give billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine while they have no relief at home. They have no relief from debt. They have no relief from student debt. They have no medical care, no coverage. They're struggling to survive. And this is across the board. And after Ukraine, they saw billions go to Israel in the same way while they get, frankly, nothing.
All right. I don't care if your nanny was black or you ate grits for breakfast every morning and you knew a girl in high school, a black girl, and she was nice. I don't care if your nanny was black, because Michael Griffiths is dead. Killed by white youths who got her free, even though witnesses testified to their crime. So I don't care, you hear? I don't care, because black woman Tawana Brawley was raped by four white cops who are still out on the street. And Donald Trump takes out a three-page ad in the New York Times calling for the death of six black youth accused of raping a white woman. So I don't care if your nanny was black and you ate grits for breakfast every morning and you knew a black girl in high school and she was nice. I don't care, you hear? I don't care, cause for too long we have held our pain in our very flesh. For too long our bleeding heart